another episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer. And this week, we have special guest, Hamilton County Commissioner Alicia Reese. Now, we've already interviewed Alicia, and Alicia had a lot to say. So we are going to forego our usual opening segment where we talk about things in the headlines, because that's what we're going to get into with Alicia Reese. This week, Hamilton County and the Bengals announced that they had, and we're calling it an agreement to have an agreement for stadium renovations ahead of the lease negotiations. What we learned is that there is money, a loan program called the G5 program from the NFL. And the Bengals are going to put in some money. The county is going to get some money, about $65 million for a total of about $120 million that are going to go towards stadium renovations ahead of the lease. So we're going to get into all of that with Hamilton County Commissioner Alicia Reese right now. Here we are. It is special guest time on a That's So Cincinnati podcast. As promised, we have Hamilton County Commissioner Alicia Reese. Welcome.
Thank you. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
I haven't been in the new studio you have here.
Well, this is probably not as fancy as your studio. And what's it like? You host a podcast now.
I do.
So we're switching the turntable.
Yeah. A lot of people know my background is in radio. And this year will be my 30th year in radio, film, and broadcasting. I started in college. And I remember going back to my school one year at Grambling State University, and they were like, oh, you know, I had been vice mayor and I was a state representative, and I thought, man, I did okay for myself. And they said, Reese, we thought you were going to do something big. I said, what? They said, we thought you were going to do something big. You're going to do something big in radio. So I came home. I said, wait a minute. I've got to get back into, I love radio. The podcasting was just starting. And the funny story is I went to the Jerry Springer podcast that was in Kentucky.
Okay.
And I went over there and I said, listen, I met with his people and everything. I said, I need to get this podcast. I'm home on Fridays because I was at the State House then. And I said, I got to get back in this radio thing, and I maybe could do it as podcasting. And they said, well, the great thing about podcasts is everyone can do it. The bad thing about podcasts, everyone could do it. So
right.
They weren't really encouraging. They weren't so encouraging. And so then I said, well, look at this video. I've been going all over the country wherever I go, and I stop, and I love soul food. And I said, I'm looking for the soul. I even went to Justin Bieber's soul food spot in New York. And I said, maybe I could do something with this. And they were like, oh my God, that's it. I was like, what's it? They said, that's the name of your podcast. I said, what? Alicia Reese Soul Food. I said, well, I won't be able to, you know, do all this cooking and stuff. They said, no, soul food. Everything you do, you put your soul into it, and you can break down issues. So I talk about breaking down issues to collard greens and cornbread where everybody can really understand it. And we have a thing where we say we're bringing the hot sauce. So it has just, it's on radio as well, and on two stations, and then it's, you know, social media and podcasts, and it's right. Been fun.
So where can we listen to it on the regular radio dial?
Regular radio, 103.1 FM and 1050 AM every Friday live at noon, and then it replays on Saturdays at 7 PM.
And you can download it from your social. And,
yeah. Okay. Alicia Reese Soul Food. They can go there and download it.
Bring the hot sauce today?
I didn't bring the hot sauce.
What?
I should have brought the bottle of hot sauce.
Okay. Well.
Like Beyonce says, I keep my hot sauce in my purse. I didn't bring it today, though.
Well, so you're involved in some of the hottest topics in town right now. Oof. But we're going to set that aside for a moment. We'll get into the stadium and some other stuff. But as we like to do on this podcast when we have someone in, is get a little bit of the background of people who are making headlines. And I was doing my research, my extensive research. Because you have been an elected official just about as long as I've been involved in media in Cincinnati. Like when I was at the Enquirer, you were a member of Cincinnati City Council. And if I'm correct, you were the youngest person elected.
Youngest woman.
Youngest
woman. And still to this day.
Elected to Cincinnati City Council. So you've been doing Cincinnati area politics for a while. Yeah. It's a two-part question. Is what drove you to get into politics, and how have you lasted so long in a career that sometimes burns people out? Like they are they are done, right? Yeah. So let's start with the first part of that. You sort of have a political legacy. Why don't you explain that to get us started?
Yeah. So the funny thing that most people don't know, I never wanted to be in politics.
That's what everybody
says. It's so crazy. I grew up, my parents, and they took me everywhere with them. So when my father was the first black chief of staff in the history of Cincinnati for the first black mayor, Mayor Theodore M. Berry. And so I was just a little kid. I'd be at City Hall. That's how I ended up meeting, you know, Jerry Springer, the council member, because I thought he was younger and his office was so cool. So my dad would let me go up to his office. I said, he's young and cool. But I was just a little girl, and I never forget saying that, man, I can't wait until I grow up. I get to be, you know, 18. I get to not only vote, but I don't have to be involved. Let someone else solve the problem. So just growing up, my parents, I grew up in civil rights. And so we're always in the marching for, a better this, a better that, marching for the marginalized. And so I did that. I also was involved in presidential campaigns. Reverend Jesse Jackson was running for president, and I was in the room when he made his announcement that he would run. My father and some others had been invited, and I went, and my dad said, just sit there and, you know, don't be seen because I'm not supposed to be in there. But when he gave a speech that we have to dream beyond our circumstances. And I looked around where we were, and he said, we could come from the projects of Chicago and we can dream to be president of the United States. That's when I said, wow, I could go home and I can run for class president. It's possible for me. So I ended up running for class president.
When you were at Grambling or
Withrow? Withrow High School.
All right. Yeah, 88, right?
Class 89. Yeah. Please get that right. The greatest class of all time. We always do that teasing.
I was basing it on when Reverend Jackson was running for president.
He ran in 88. In 89, right. I said, I'm running for a class president.
Okay. All right.
And so I ended up winning. That was my first election, but I still, my thing was I wanted to be in media. My parents also had a marketing and company and advertising agency, and I got a chance to see it from the ground up, and I said, man, I'm gonna go there and do that. So I was recruited to go to Brown University. I was ready to go. I also played basketball for Withrow, Girls City Champs. I gotta put that out there. I decided at the last minute I wanted to go to Grambling State University. There were some executives at Procter & Gamble who had partnered with my school, Withrow, and I saw them. They were different ages, different times they came out, and I said, man, I want to be a part of that. Plus, I want to go to school in the South because I had read about, you know, Dr. King and all of the things that happened, John Lewis, and I said, man, that's where it all is, and I want to go there. And so at the last minute, I changed my mind and said, I want to go to Grambling. My parents had a heart attack because, you know, when parents feel like they've already got the scholarships ready to go, and
right,
now you're last minute. but the folks at Procter & Gamble, I had interned there, and they had contacts down at Grambling. They got to see me. They saw my grades and everything. And so I ended up going to Grambling down south. And so I really think the growing up and going to school in the South, my parents who had been in civil rights, my parents who had a small business, kind of shaped me kind of how I am now. And also interning at Procter & Gamble, how to negotiate a win-win, you know. So all those things, I think, make me a little unique in terms of me coming back, because none of my friends did. They said if you were, if you were African-American, you had to go to Atlanta, you got to go to New York, you got to go to Chicago to make it. Cincinnati, you couldn't make it. And at that time, young people were leaving. They had a brain drain going.
Right.
And I wanted to prove everybody wrong. I said, this is my hometown and we can make it better and we can do it. And next thing you know, I was helping Roxanne Qualls run for Congress. And I ended up having Maxine Waters, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, came to town, and she saw something in me, and she said, call me when you're ready to run. I said, oh, no, I'm not trying to run. I'll help get people registered to vote. But long story short, 10 years after high school graduation, they were going to close the health clinics in Cincinnati. And we're only one of two cities that fund city-owned health clinics. And that was before we had affordable care and all that. I said, man, something's got to be done. I called Congresswoman Maxine Waters. Don't think she was going to call me back. She did. I said, something has to be done. And she said, yeah, you're going to do it. I said, I am? And she said, yeah, you called me. Now you're running. I said, I guess I'm running. So I ended up running for city council. It was not popular to be young. And the number one thing they said to me is I couldn't do it because I was young. And I was wanting to prove that differently. And so we did. And then the next time we ran, we had younger people running. David Pepper ran. And I also helped appoint John Cranley. And so the rest is history. Young people are running and getting involved.
So with all this political experience in your background, it was Maxine Waters who pushed you over the edge.
She was the one. And it's so funny because they, you know, people like to give my dad credit, but he was totally against it. I'm the firstborn. And, you know, my parents were like, she's the firstborn, you know, who wants to put their kid into politics? And it wasn't popular for young people at that time. But my mother said once she makes up her mind, and God bless my mother's soul, who passed away from breast cancer at 57. But at that time, mom said, hey, she made up her mind. You know how she is. She makes up her mind. She's going for it. And Congresswoman Maxine Waters came to town, campaigned for me for a city council race. And then I came in fifth. I didn't come in ninth. I came in fifth. And then every time after that, I came in, second overall. Mm. So, you know, I got a lot of experience at City Hall. And so I did that.
And through some challenging times.
And so, my gosh, it's like baptism by fire.
Right.
But had a chance. I was in the court when we negotiated the settlement, the racial profiling lawsuit settlement known as the Collaborative Agreement. And the mayor, Charlie Luke, at that time, he put a lot of pressure on me. He said, hey, you got to get 9-0 vote. Can you imagine that? So I had to make the calls to try to get us to a 9-0 vote. And Pat DeWine, who is he and I worked together a lot. He's a judge now, but Ohio Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But he and I were on council together, and we got more bipartisan legislation done than anybody. They used to call us the odd couple because we, you know, Democrat, Republican, getting things done. But we were both young, and we were like, hey, we're young. We want to make a change. We're gonna shock the world. And so we did get a lot of things done. And when I left City Hall, I did run for mayor. It was a last minute because Charlie Lucas said at the last minute, I'm not running.
Right.
So you didn't have much time. It was the first time we had a primary and direct election with a primary. And it was really tough. But I was, you know, the first woman to file to run directly for mayor. But then, you know, I didn't win. So I said, hey, I'm leaving this.
Mallory was the next one.
Mallory
right?
ended yeah, up Mark being Mallory, a mayor. Yeah, we were in the primary together. And then Mallory became the mayor. Then I said, hey, I got to get back to my Oprah dreams of having my own media company. And so I started doing that. But then I got recruited by Governor Strickland and Lieutenant Governor Lee Fisher to come to Columbus to help lead tourism.
Just to help our listeners follow this path.
Yeah,
it's now crazy. Now we're talking about how you got involved and elected to the State House.
Yeah. So I was up there with tourism. And I had a lot of assistant deputy director of that. I loved it. 88 counties, had to drive all over the state, had to promote the state. And one of the things was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So that's where I get all this tourism experience. And we had the largest ROI. But my mother was getting worse with her cancer. And I was going back and forth. And so when she passed away, I really wasn't, you know, it was hard. You have your mother die at 57. I went back up to Columbus, and that's when people were coming to me and said, hey, Tyrone Yates is getting ready to term out. And Judge Tyrone Yates, he wasn't a judge then, say, I'm getting ready to turn him out. You would be excellent for this. I hadn't even been thinking about state legislature. But what I loved about it was like, wait a minute, I could be at home, which I wanted to come back home. But then I could still be impacting statewide, which I really loved as a tourism official. And so the rest was history. I became a state representative. I'm back and forth on the road to Columbus. It's grueling. I came home mostly almost every day. It was grueling.
Oh, wow.
In the super minority. And I end up being elected president of the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus. So if anyone knows how the state, you've got the governor, you've got the president of the Senate, you've got the Speaker of the House, and then you've got the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus president. So I was in a lot of the rooms. The good part is that at the city, I was vice chair of finance for Cincinnati. But then I went to the state, and as a freshman, I was on the state budget committee for the whole state. It got a lot of experience learning and fighting for the taxpayers. And what I found when you get to the state, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, Republican, if you're from Southwest Ohio, you're from Cincinnati, you have to really fight for your fair share. They want to give everything to Columbus and Cleveland and everybody else.
That could have been that could have been the perfect segue to talk about the stadium. But we have to finish up with your political journey
so
here.
I do that.
So we'll put a pin in that.
All right. So I do that. I get all this experience with state budgets, state negotiations, but I actually get a lot done with a Republican governor, Kasich. And people couldn't understand that. But again, DeWine's son and I, Pat DeWine and I got a lot done now, Kasich and I. And we got a lot of things done. We got a lot of things done for small businesses. Minority businesses was at like 1%. When I left, it got up to 19%. We were able to work together to get the MLK. A lot of people drive and get off at that MLK exit. Well, what people don't know is that I helped negotiate that because it was going to be in place, but they call fast track 35 years. And so they were doing some things in Cleveland, and Cleveland was upset. And he needed my help as the president of Black Caucus to help with a bridge in Cleveland. And I said, well, that's nice, but I'm from Cincinnati and I need something down here in my district. You haven't done anything down here. And he says, what do you have? And I knew that everybody had done the, you know, put all the pieces together, but we just couldn't get the state.
Right.
I said, it's the MLK
Which is such
exchange.
An important exchange. I mean, you got the university there, you got Pill Hill where the hospitals are, and it was treacherous.
It was treacherous, and it was almost like it can never happen.
Yeah.
And I remember John Cranley at the time was a councilman, and I was a vice mayor, and we had he had a press conference because he was running for Congress. Like, we need to have an exit here, and nobody listened. And so now time moved on. Here I was, a state representative, president of Black Caucus. I've got the governor with me now, and then I called down here. I've got the mayor because now he's the mayor. I said, we can get it now. We can get it. And so it was done in less than 6 years. And it is saving lives. I mean, you can get to the hospital quicker and all those kind of things. But the big thing was it was the only highway exchange in an urban city in America. And at one time, it might still be the only new highway exchange in Ohio. So I was on the transportation committee, and I feel so great to have been able to help bring that project back home. So that's what some of the big things. I did a lot of other things. I had a whole lot of things I was able to get done at the state house. But my term ended because they have term limits. And I said, okay, now I'm going to get back to my Oprah thing. Let's get back to my media company and doing what I also love to do. And when I came home, I was out of politics for 2 years. And what people probably don't realize from city council, when I left city council and I went into running again at the state house, it was a 5-year window. I don't know how many people could come back after 5 years, usually forgotten and those kind of things. But it was a 5-year window. So this time it's a 2-year window. I'm out of office for 2 years. And Todd Pertune, the late Todd Pertune, made the announcement that he was not going to run again. Well, I decided to sleep in that day. And anybody that knows me, I don't sleep in. I said, I'm going to sleep in and see what it feels like. But that's the day he makes this announcement. So I wake up and I have like 20 missed calls from, you know, some of my confidants, you know, Miss Bernadette Watson, he was like, get up. And I'm like, what's going on? And she had put out that I should run. And so a lot of people thought I should run, and I picked up petitions, but I said, I'm going to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came a time, well, you got to make a decision. And so that's how I ended up running for county commissioner. But each of these times, Anyone knows me, I'm very spiritual. So I always look at, what does God lead me to do? And I felt like that was what he led me to do, because I wasn't, these things I was never thinking about running for them. It's always a cause or a calling or someone's coming to recruit me to do it. And so anyway, ended up running, and I didn't know we was going to have a pandemic. And then I found my real purpose for running, because I knew that people had risked their lives to vote for me. And to get, at that time, 212,000 votes, I had to come through a primary and all that stuff. Did not get, you know, endorsed, all those things.
When you say risk their lives, because there was a pandemic. Because,
yeah,
and,
pandemic. And you had to.
The uncertainty.
You had to come with a mask.
Right.
You don't know what's out there. Mm-hmm. And I take it super serious. And, you know, we had gotten ARPA money, $158 million. And in my career, I've never had that opportunity to really connect people with real help. And we had people, you know, middle-class people who never had to ask for help from the government, didn't know where to go. And so that really is what drove me to create the 513 Relief Bus and go out there and take county government out of the walls of downtown. And, you know, I was all out in Cleves. I was, you know, I was at Harrison, you know, 200 people, water was going to get cut off in Harrison. And they were happy to see the bus. They didn't know that this was available to them. And so just people got furloughed and just needed a little help to get past the furlough. And so, you know, I went to 79 locations to try to sell this idea of, this is the way we need to do business.
Now, refresh my memory, that funding for pandemic relief, federal funding, how was that managed locally? Was that through
It went through
county
the county.
Okay.
Yeah, they went through county government.
So Board of Health, county government, all county services were the ones that were the funnel for that money.
Yeah, so $158 million came directly to Hamilton County. And the commissioners decide where those dollars go. In addition to that, $100 million came through our Jobs and Family Services, and we, you know, decide how we get it to them. So a lot of counties, they weren't able to get to the people. People, you know, couldn't access it or didn't know where to go, because remember, offices were pretty much, you know, kind of closed. So where do you go? How do you find it? They see it on TV or they read it in a newspaper, but where do I go? And so had a vision from Hampton University, and I flew down there in the middle of what they call coronavirus then, and saw their RV, saw what they were doing, came back, said, we need to do something similar, but I wanted economic services and health services, and I wanted to go beyond just the pandemic. I wanted to become, this is the way you do business. People get their, they're used to hitting a button and getting their food from DoorDash. They're used to hitting a button and Kroger's is dropping off their groceries. We were antiquated in a way. You couldn't access us from the smartphone. You know, we weren't prepared infrastructurally. And so I think that's one of the things I was able to help bring to the table was like, look, we've got to come with some new innovative ways. And so this 513 Relief Bus, which has just been amazing, it can transform into whatever we want it to be. But the backside is medical. So no copay, blood pressure checks, glucose checks. We're partnering with UC with a new way to do cancer screenings on the bus. And we're saving lives. And in the front of the bus is your economics. So we're connecting you to kinship program. People, grandparents are taking care of kids and had no idea we had funding to help you. But rental assistance, they didn't know where to apply. Small businesses, how do you get the grants? And so we pull up with this bus and we go all over the county. And it's like Hamilton County now is coming to you. And so now it's won awards and, you know, other counties are trying to do it. But we were first and innovative to it. So I really found purpose in it. We've helped over 30,000 people connect throughout the county, whether it's rural, whether it's urban, whether it's city, whether it's suburban. Here we come. We're coming to you. And it also helps us build relationships. And we have other partners. Kroger's is getting ready to come in and do a partnership with us. UC Health, like I said, has done partnerships. We even have people applying for jobs on the bus. Some of the private sector folks are with us on this bus. We're doing eyesight. We're getting ready to do dental. So it's just you know, it helped us create a new way. And that's what I'm, what I try to do is, you know, hear from the people directly. You know, I keep my ear close to the ground. I'm all over the county and I hear them say different things. And what I try to do is bring that back, because I see myself in this particular job as their representative. And I hear a lot, we haven't seen the county out in these areas. Well, we got the bus coming to you. I heard about this stuff, but how do I access it? You know, where's the help at? Those are the kind of things that I think is really, really important. So I did that. I've been reelected now. So coming through everything, a tough, tough, you know, time from an election standpoint. And I actually, less people voted, unfortunately, but I got more votes this time, 218,338 votes. And everything that I heard from the people is what I'm trying to bring back and implement at the county if I can.
So that's
so I'm here now.
That is a lengthy political resume right there. No wonder you haven't been able to launch your Oprah dreams. You just,
I still got the radio show and podcast. I love
there's
that.
Still hope.
And
still
guess
hope.
What? I'm still only 12 years old, right?
yes, you have your whole life.
I'm still young.
All right. So you touched on something that totally fits into the discussion going on right now about stadium renovations, in that the state, as many people feel and you articulated, seems to put Cincinnati at the end of the list. You know, investment in Cleveland, investment in Central Ohio and Franklin County and Columbus. You partnered with the Bengals, the county commission, and formally requested $350 million for stadium renovations. What do you think the likelihood of getting any type of funding at this point in the budget process? And let's back up. Just to set the stage, there is already in play a plan for the stadium in Cleveland that would be based on bond sales. That's already part of the budget draft that the House did, which is done. So we're coming in after that process. Senate still has to work on its budget. The governor's budget didn't include it because Governor DeWine wants to pay for Stadia with a increase to the gaming tax. Where are we?
That's a loaded question.
I think people are lost a little bit. Like, how do you sort it all out?
Okay, so first of all, let me just say this, bro. In running, just coming fresh out of election season, if you will, while this is a very important topic, I want to say that it was not the number one topic that's on the minds of the taxpayers. What I heard was number one was high taxes, which I have been fighting against, and I'm going to talk about it in the context of this lease, although the state does do the reevaluations. I've, you know, called on the governor to freeze the taxes for senior citizens, but for some reason, it didn't take my call on that one. But
well, you're talking property taxes.
Property taxes. Mm-hmm. People are concerned about holding on to their homes. They have to pay it in our building. I've gotten on elevators with, you know, people on there crying, senior citizens crying, saying, I'm trying to hold on to my house. Of course, the other thing is, you know, the economy, cost of living. Am I going to be able to survive? So in the context of that, when we are negotiating any deal, whether it's the Bengal lease or soon to be the Reds lease or any other major component, what I've been hearing is that we got to do it in the context of the taxpayers right now are trying to hang on by a shoestring right now. And with that in the context, we've got to get a better deal because we do own the stadiums. 1996, people went to the ballot and they voted to build two stadiums. I was not even in politics back then. And now I have a stadium lease that is still in play, even though I wasn't a commissioner back then. So 1997, they get this deal. People were for the two stadiums, but what happened was the lease. When you get the lease, that happened behind closed doors with lawyers, et cetera, some that are no longer around, and they signed a lease. Three male Republicans, they signed a lease. It was signed by Bettinghaus, Dowling, and Nyer. And in this
the
lease.
The current lineup of the commission.
The current lineup of the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, and let me just say, in here, it was sold to the people as though they were going to get a 30% property tax rollback every year. Now, that has not been realized since I've been elected. I've been able to get it done at least two out of my 4 years that I had been there. But it has to be voted on every single year.
Every year.
By December.
And every time
they say they don't have enough, the administrator always says, we don't have enough money to do it.
And it was sold because the stadium tax that was approved by voters in 96 was a half-cent sales tax.
Correct.
And so the... I won't call it a compromise, but to make this pill easier to swallow, it was like, okay, well, if you're shopping in Hamilton County compared to other counties in the state that also travel and go see the Bengals, right, and are elevated by this economic impact that the Bengals have on the property, on the backs of Hamilton County taxpayers who shop, the idea was we will see these revenues grow, and we're going to give you a little bit of a of your money back.
Right. But when you look at the
but
actual...
But we never have enough money in the budget.
Well, the question is, we have money when we want to have money, and then we don't have money when we don't, is what I've found in my research since being on the commission. They say in the first whereas on here, it says that the voters approved a half-cent sales tax, just like you said, increase to fund the construction of two stadium facilities. Then they put the word and a property tax rollback, but they never put the amount of the property tax rollback. So again, it was you and I, you know, we've been in the marketing business. It was false advertisement based on what's actually in the lease. So when I first got elected, the first thing I did was that I got to read this lease. I got to break this lease down multiple times because we are in a lopsided lease where we're paying 94% or more, and the ownership, they are paying about 4% or 6%, and they get all the revenues, and we don't get any credit for any revenues to try to bring the cost down on the taxpayers. We are dealing with an older stadium now, and it's just like an old car. When the warranty goes out, you don't want to get stuck with having to fix the engine. So one of the things that we are trying to do is how do we climb out of a lease that the taxpayers were mad about? I mean, they even went to the polls and voted someone out of office because of it, because they were so upset about this particular lease. So now we're coming to the point where the lease is expiring, and now we've got to get down to the nitty gritty. And my position has been we are supposed to be the we're supposed to be the negotiators on behalf of the taxpayers. That's why we're here. And of course, the Bengals, they have their ownership with their lawyers, and their job is to get the deal for their lawyers. But our job is, even though I'm a big fan, I got to take the fan hat off, and I now have to be the negotiator for the taxpayers. So what
you're... Let me ask you on that point.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it could be a game of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to flinch first? Are you in the position to call the bluff on the Bengals when it comes to, you know, multiple sources, whether you talk to Troy Blackburn or whether you talk just, you know, read between the lines of when Katie Blackburn is speaking to the owners group? If they don't get their way and say, well, we're going to have to sell the team, are you willing to take it to that extreme as a commissioner?
Well, I think what's important for people to understand how this negotiation is set up, which I find it strange myself. The commissioners were both all three of us are individually elected. We don't run as a package. We can't even talk to each other unless it's in public.
Right.
Most of the time.
And let me explain that real quick, because this is an area I just love. And that's, you know, government transparency and open meetings. Because there are only three commissioners.
Right.
If you were to call Denise Driehaus mm-hmm. on the phone and have a conversation about county business, that would constitute a public meeting that was not open to the public and there was no agenda. So you guys can really, unlike a 9-member city council where you can, 3 or 4 of you can caucus informally in the hallway or whatever, or perhaps get on a text string, right?
Or the state legislature, where we could talk.
But you have, the three of you have to have these discussions at the commissioner meeting.
Yeah. In public.
Yeah.
And let me say this. I have been an advocate for this lease to be very transparent because this is a complicated issue. I even did a segment on what is in the lease. Most people don't know what's in the lease. This lease, they covered every single thing, everywhere you turn from, you know, we're paying all the gas and electric, we're paying the water bill, they don't have to pay rent anymore. I mean,
But their rent's down to...
$0 now.
It's $0 now.
And what happens is there's a surcharge on every ticket. I forget what it is. But when they get the surcharge, then they send you a check. Now, let me be clear. In the lease, it says to rent the stadium, it's $100,000 per day. Okay, I wanted to say that. Per day. And the taxpayers, we're supposed to get 50% of that. And then they get 50%. So if you in there every day and then you send us something saying here's $100,000 after a whole year, obviously we're not getting the fair share. There's a lot of things in this lease. And let me say, this lease is like an insurance policy. They don't make it anymore. No other city, no other NFL team has this type of lease. So if I'm the Bengals ownership, I would want to hold on to it too, because they don't make this anymore.
So is it fair to say that as you are working on a new lease, your position is it's time to start from scratch.
It's time.
And the Bengals are starting from the position, oh, we love this lease. We just need to maybe tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, I think with the voters, from what I've heard from people, we got to start from scratch. We've got to make sure that if we say we're going to do 30% on property tax rollback, that is in stone so that the people feel like they weren't lied to. We've got to get a lot of the repairs, because the maintenance off the backs of the taxpayers, there's a lot of exposure in here on the taxpayers' backs. And so we've got to go from, you know, we can't have a 94%. We're paying 94%, but we don't get any of the revenues. Now, how it's set up, just like you're educating your listeners, is weird. It's not the commissioners. We're not in there negotiating. And that's very unfortunate, because we are the ones that have to put our names on here on behalf of the taxpayers. The way it's set up is that our administrator, who is not elected by any of the voters, does not have to answer to or, you know, go face to face. You know, I got to go out to Anderson Township. I got to go out to Colerain Township. He don't have to do any of that.
But Jeff Aluto, who you're referencing, is charged with carrying out the wishes of the commissioners.
My point is, I'm not in a room, and I've done a lot of negotiation as a state legislator and all this. I like to be in the room to hear, and sometimes what I learned from my days at Procter & Gamble, you can see the person's eyes. You can hear something. It's different than when somebody come back and give me the cliff notes versus I'm in the meeting. And I might hear something that maybe Jeff Aluto might not, because he wasn't out in Colerain Township when they said something to me. Make sure you catch this part. He wasn't out there. And so I'm not in the room. Neither of us are really in the room negotiating. And I find that I don't like that style, because I'm responsible and all I get is the cliff notes. And sometimes if I don't ask the right question, I'm not getting the answer that I necessarily want. And I think that's very important. Now, I've been outspoken about that. So you've got lawyers. We have hired somebody, and I appreciate that. Last time they hired somebody, and we don't even know who the somebody is. They're not around anymore. But at the end of the day, I have to put my name on something on behalf of the 218,000 people, and they're going to want to know, did you ask this question?
Right.
And I wasn't there. Or did you hear them say this when they were in the room? And I would probably say, no, I didn't hear that part. So my point is, the negotiating is very tough when you're not actually the one in the room negotiating. So the people that got elected are not in the room.
Right.
And the people who ain't elected are in the room. And that makes it kind of tough. So I'm only dealing with information that's brought back. And
but at
sometimes
some point, you'll be voting on it.
Yeah, at some point, we will be voting.
And well, so to simplify it as much as we can,
yeah.
And it might not be possible. So if this is way oversimplified, just say, no, that's okay. Not how the world works, bro. But is it your ultimate goal that this new lease agreement that's going to include a big chunk of change for stadium renovations would be split three ways? That the county, the taxpayers would pay a third of it instead of the 94% roughly that taxpayers paid when the stadiums were built. That the Bengals/NFL would pay the third, and then the remaining third would come from some form of funding from the state or a wider base of tax money, not just Hamilton County, when the whole region benefits from the Bengals. Is that roughly what you're looking for, a three-way split?
I think for me, it's a little more complicated than that. I am looking for a taxpayer-friendly lease.
What would that look like?
That would mean taking some of the burden off the backs of the taxpayers. Now, how it is funded, right? It could be a third, or some places they got 50-50 partnerships. Some places it's different. But at the end of the day, the taxpayer has to feel as though they're not stuck with the maintenance, which is very tough, that they're somehow getting a part of this revenue is helping to take the burden off, right? And then the facility cannot just sit there. And right now, nobody's in it, but we still getting a gas and electric bill. We're still getting a water bill. It has to have more usage. So it can't be privately when it's time to make money. And then all of a sudden, we own it. You have voiced
strongly in the past that, you know, for example, when the Bengals went to the Super Bowl, you wanted to have a watch party at the stadium.
Yeah.
Bengals said no.
Yeah.
And the way the lease is written now, they're allowed to do that.
Yeah, they said no. And
so
then came back and did a watch party and charged the people. They're having a watch. So they, in other words, we like the idea, but we want to make some money off of it.
Right.
And I'm more saying that we have to be able to utilize this to bring more revenue in.
Which would be more friendly for the taxpayers
yeah.
if the county can also share in some of that.
We got to share. And we got to have more events. I mean, we didn't go after the, WWE one. We're not even going after. We do one or two concerts a year, and that's it. But that's because in there, we gave away to management. We don't even know what's in there. How do you vote on something? You haven't been in the building. We haven't done a walkthrough to look at what are the real needs here. All of the upgrades are upgrades to areas that is good for the ownership, because if you do the suites, they can charge more. If you do the elevators that only go to the suite level, they're doing their part. They got to do more to bring in revenue. But also, they're the only team, the NFL allowed them to try to bring in some other outside private money so we can take this burden off of the public. And they're the only team that voted no. And so I think that in this lease, what I think people need to understand is that they do have the power to, they have 10 more years on this same lease.
By extending it. Right. Is that ultimately, in the short term, is that what you think will happen before all the details are hammered out for a new lease, that it'll be extended just to give everyone a longer runway?
You know, I don't know, because I'm not in.
You're not in a room.
I'm not in a room to look them in the eyes to see, like, you know, which way they're going with this thing. But I will tell you this in terms of the state. I've been on the state finance committee, and I think that you know, one of the things I always tried to tell us is that a year I've been screaming, let's get this lease done for a year and a half. And now here we are final seconds, and we still haven't taken out the blank canvas and started to do any writing. We're now late to the game with the state. We did meet with the governor. I asked for us to have the meeting with the governor, and he had said, hey, he hadn't heard from us. And so his proposal, which, you know, we supported, was sports betting. Mm-hmm. And then the legislator, when they made that move, because I've been at the state house, once they make a move and you see Cleveland is moving on up, I kept telling them, you know, a year and a half ago, we might need to get with Cleveland and see if we can
put a deal together. Why didn't that happen?
I'm not in the room to negotiate. I don't know why that didn't happen.
Let me ask you this. When it was announced that the Bengals in Hamlin County made that request for the $350 million, there was immediate pushback from lawmakers in Columbus that said, this is so different than what's going on in Cleveland. One, it's a bond sale, so in theory, that money gets paid back at some point. So you're not directly diverting money that's in the general fund or that's already paying for other services. But also, that new stadium development, especially if it moves in the southern part of Cuyahoga County, is going to be pay for itself eventually because it's adding to the economy, where this stadium's already here. So just renovating it is just keeping it current, and it's not a new project that's going to significantly add, you know, be a bigger or a new economic engine in the county. And so it doesn't seem like the request that Hamilton County made is being taken too seriously. One, it came late, and two, it's perceived as not a good investment. How would you respond to that?
You know, it goes back to your question that you had for me. You wanted to know, is it where do we go from here? That also is at the state level. I told them from day one, because I've been at the state house, I've been on the finance committee, I said, we got to go and cut a deal with Cleveland and come in as a package.
But it seems too late for
that. Well, they didn't listen. And, you know, now we got to wait and see what happens. But again, that's what I'm telling you, because, you know, again, the experience that I bring, because I've been city finance, state finance, and now I'm at the county. And like I said, they wanted to do how, you know, they wanted to do it. And that's what my point is. When you have and it's no shot at them, but we have a system where the unelected person is the interpreter, the negotiator, and the mouthpiece. And then you have someone, you know, like myself, that's been at the state. And I'm going to tell you, I've been in the negotiation because as the president of Black Caucus, I had to negotiate with the governor. Everybody, and if you're in a minority, you don't get a chance to really negotiate with the governor. You know, you're just in a minority. The leadership gets to be in these rooms. And so I told him over a year ago, before we even met with the governor, before the sports betting was on the table, is that we need to cut a deal with Cleveland. And we didn't do it. And so now we're in the position that we're in. And I've got to wait to hear what Jeff Aluto has to say, because he's the one. And if I'm going to get all the information, but I'm going to keep fighting for, I can't get bits and pieces. This is a very complicated deal because we're trying to negotiate out of a hole. Mm-hmm. And you got to have, yes, it's great. We've got outside experts that understands possibly the NFL, but do they understand the taxpayers of Hamilton County?
Right.
So you got to have a joint thing. We all got to be kind of going in together, because he may get something that, okay, this is how they're doing in NFL, and that's great. Then I might say, listen, I've been at the state house. We got to come in with a package. And I just think if we would have came in as a package with Cleveland, we wouldn't be on the outside. And so now we're racing against time. I will tell you that there were some moves that were made that didn't result to me in the results that we should have had. For example, we did a $39 million package on seats, not the seats in the way up high, but the seats where they can sell more. And the administrator, Jeff, said, hey, if we do this, it'll show that we're ready to work together with the Bengal ownership and we can get to the lease. Well, we did that and we never got to the lease, never really got credit. Then he said, well, if we do this with the grass and we work together, it'll show that we're together. And I said, fine. So I went with it too. And we still ain't said we'll get a lease. We still have not sat down and written anything. We finally handed a package of here's what we're thinking so we can begin negotiation, right? I thought it was delivered last year. I told them to deliver it last year. And then I found out that they hadn't delivered it. And I finally said, deliver it now. And what happens, bro, if you want to know what really happens, is almost every Friday around 4:45, we'll get a call. And they'll say, well, the Bengals said they got to do this and you got 15 minutes to make a decision. And we got to hurry up. And I don't think we can win for the taxpayers doing that. Our job right now is not a PR campaign of everything's great. Our job right now is to get in a room, get the blank canvas out and say, how do we get a better deal? How do we get a win-win? Win for the taxpayers and win for the ownership. We're not trying to run amok to the ownership, but they got to get a better deal for the taxpayers as well. And then we come out with the press thing that we have come up with something. There's a new thing coming and I'm dropping this to you. I don't know when this airs, but you'll
this
have
week.
It. There the NFL G5 loan. That the Bengals went in and I think they asked for $50 million. We need a lot more from the NFL than that, but it's a loan program, but we have to put in some money for this loan program. So Minister Jeff Aluto says, hey, this ends in April, at the end of April. We have to decide if we're going to put in 50%, about $60 million, he said. We're going to put in about $60 million, and then they put in, and if we don't, we lose the G5 NFL money. Okay, so my point is, okay, the NFL...
It sounds like you're paying for that.
Exactly, that's my point. And if we, but my point is, that's my point about advice, because I'm not in the room, I can't ask the questions, I'm just getting what he's telling us, and he says, we got to hurry up and do this, and I'm thinking, well, aren't we in the middle of a negotiation? Where is the lease at? When are we going to get down to the lease?
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Are you happy with the administrator's performance at this point, or do you think that's a liability?
Well, we have a review. What I'm not happy with is the process right now, because the process of this negotiation is that this is a very complicated deal that ties our hands for another 10 or 20 plus years. Like you said, I got a deal here that I wasn't even in politics, wasn't even thinking about being in politics, and I'm inheriting something I have to.
Look at the mess I walked into.
Yeah, my hands are tied. And so what we want to say is the taxpayers have been saying for a long time, we got to get a better deal, we got to get out of this lease, and now that time has come. What I'm concerned about is sometimes the recommendation is different than what I'm hearing from the taxpayers. And my job is to present my clients, the taxpayers, what they're interested in, right? And so to come in and say that we have to put up $60 million by the end of April because G5, they have a deadline. Okay, let's think about these deadlines. The state of Ohio has a budget. They have a deadline. In this contract 20 years ago, they gave us the deadline that the Bengals have to let us know by June of this year if they're going to stay so we can try to keep working or if they were going to leave. We got a deadline. And now everybody's deadlines are being met except the deadlines that we have that's in this contract that we knew 20 years ago was going to be a deadline. And so these recommendations of let's do the $39 million, let's do the grass. Oh, they said it's the season, so they don't want to talk about it right now. We want to get through the season. Well, we're getting ready to go into another season. So is that going to be the case? And so, those are the things that I'm concerned about, but we still have these other things you want us to do. You want me to give money for the G5 because G5 has a deadline, but we don't have a lease. And so same way with the state. I said, hey, let's go get a deal with Cleveland. Come with a package because I know Cleveland going to have some muscle. Let's get a package. They didn't do the package. Now let's run up to the state house and run, you know, door to door and try to meet with some senators. I don't like us being late to the game. That's not how I was taught to negotiate. Mm-hmm. Procter & Gamble taught me to go in with a win-win and see if we can get a deal. And that's how I like to go forward. I don't like to go forward as we're chasing every time when we already knew the deadlines. We were supposed to drop off our proposal. We had that proposal almost a year ago, and you didn't drop it off. Then you drop it off, you know, just now. It just doesn't work. Or they call us on a Friday and say, we need to do something right away. And then they go behind our backs to the state house and cut their own deal. Now, you forget about this, Burl. They went to the state house and cut a deal so that they don't have to pay no tax on their upgrades, no right. sales tax. And we're paying for this project from the sales tax. So if you're exempt from the sales tax and you're benefiting from it, why wouldn't a taxpayer want to be exempt from the sales tax?
Right.
It's just a bad message. And then when you went up there to get the sales tax, why didn't you go up there and get the deal? You were up there early to get the sales
right.
tax. Why didn't you go up there and get a deal for this stadium? So those are the kinds of questions. And when you're in negotiation, it gets a little tough and rough. But at the end, you want to come out with a deal. But you don't go into the deal just, you know, it's a one-sided deal, and now the negotiation is one-sided. That's not how you get a good negotiation. I'll give you one more thing for you. Okay, now, if you look at the naming rights, which is in this contract, I told them up front before we knew it. I said, wait a minute. I don't think we're going to get anything out of this. The only reason we know how much the naming rights is because Paycor was selling and Paycheck, and they're a public company, so they had to open their books.
And the intrepid reporter Alex Coolidge dug into the financial records of that sale.
Right. So
it had to be disclosed.
They had to disclose mm-hmm. it for the sale, but you don't have to disclose it to the county, who's your partner. And you made sure you stayed under the threshold so that the county taxpayers could not benefit, and we kind of bring the cost down. Every time we're trying to bring the cost down on the taxpayers, we're getting a slap in the face. You can go out and get equity, buy equity into the team. You vote no, that could bring it down. You go to the state, you could go get money to say, hey, state, we need your help. Like Cleveland, the ownership of Cleveland, they're the ones at the state trying to get money, right? They go to the state and say, we want to get an exemption for sales tax. You know, so all of these things are interesting. But do you know on that deal, what was it, $60 million, $66 million
for the naming rights?
Naming mm-hmm. rights. And guess how long they gave them for naming rights?
Was it 10?
16 years.
16.
Now you want us to come with, you know, almost $1 billion, and you don't want us to give us any time.
Sounds like you got out negotiate. You got out maneuvered on that one.
Well, again,
no, they pulled a fast one.
They pulled a fast one. Yeah. But my point is, who is at the table? So we have to.
Okay.
We have to. I wanted to put that out there because when they say how many years they're going to give us for how much money, well, you gave Paycor/Paycheck for $60 million. You gave them 16 years. 16 years.
That's a bargain.
So my point is,
Phil, our producer Phil and I could have like come up with that deal and had our names on there. All right. So that's where we are. We have to wrap up, but I very quickly, if you can do it in like 2 minutes.
Oh, Lord.
The stadium lease negotiations, I feel, at least in terms of media coverage, has taken up all the oxygen. But surely there has to be another issue that Hamilton County residents, taxpayers need to be aware of that you're working on that is not getting the attention it deserves. What would that be?
Yeah. One of the things I'm working on is these property taxes. I'm fighting at the state level. We've got to come up with a formula that allows us to have some flexibility to help with the property taxes. Second is I'm fighting to get anywhere I could get a property tax break. In the the Bengals deal, I think it's very important that we make a commitment in writing that if we pass a new deal, that the 30% that was promised is in the deal, like everything else is in mm-hmm. the deal. The other thing that I am also working on, of course, I think this amateur sports facility is important. It's a $91 billion industry. I'm not looking for the county to pay for it. I'm looking for us to
find
a development partner incentives. And you can see at Summit Park, they're going to do, trying to do a stadium because that's, is where the, you know, these moms and dads and I'm just the auntie and I'm running everywhere with dance competitions, basketball, softball. I got it all. And I'm spending a lot of money. One, we can bring more scholarships back to this area. And then two, this is something that happens every single weekend and we're losing the dollars on that. So, I'm still, committed. To that. I've got an office of small business and we've got our small business day, a second one that we're doing where we're helping small business. We've helped over 2,000 small businesses. We got to be the county for small businesses. That's the future. And so we have a big event at the CentOS and the Office of Small Business that I created and also Office of Youth. We hear about all the negative things that's happening with youth and we have all these different programs. But we weren't measuring them. And so last year we came up with a state of youth and we have 27,000 youth we've helped. And we just had a youth employment, event with our 513 relief bus where we did on the bus, the free physicals. We reduce all barriers, on birth certificates free on, right there hiring youth. And last year we did 1,300 in one day. So I've got these things that I'm hearing a lot about and also working with senior citizens. I have a senior citizen fund that I championed to help seniors be able to stay in their house and in their home. So a lot of things, the economy is the number one thing. And how do we connect throughout our county with the resources, leveraging these resources, to be able to help keep our economy going. So those are the, and make sure that it's affordable. I'm for affordable housing. We did $60 million. We're the only government entity ever put $60 million in with CDF. But at the same time, I want people to be able to afford the house they already have and stay in that. So I am truly, it's a lot to do. But right now people are very scared. They're on a shoestring budget. They're trying to hang on. And I want us to be able to be the county to show other counties this is how you do it.
Well, I think I got five for the price of one there. I knew you would slip into more than one, but that was well done.
Well, thank you. It's so much happening. Everybody needs a lot of help.
Well, we're going to try not to wait so long to have you back in the studio here. So thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, reminding folks your journey to the commission. There's a lot going on there
it's
with
a
you.
Long journey.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.